Today's guest says there is a way to achieve more relationship intimacy and connection in your relationship that does not require years of therapy. We'll meet him in just a moment. Hello, everyone. My name is Pamela Brewer, welcoming you to this edition of Mind Talk. I'm very pleased to introduce you to today's guest, Jonathan Robinson, who is a psychotherapist and an author of More Love, Less Conflict, a communications playbook for couples. Some of you may know his name from a previous very popular book he's written, Communication Miracles for Couples. And of course, he's been all over media in many ways. So, all of that being said, welcome, Jonathan Robinson.
Thank you, Dr. Brewer. This is going to be fun.
Now, Dr. Robinson, you just heard me say that you say that you can improve your relationship and you can do it with the help of therapy, but you don't have to be in therapy for 5 years to improve your relationship.
Yeah, you know, I was a therapist, but I was not a very good therapist because I would only see people for one or two sessions before I'd get really impatient. So I came up with a lot of methods that I could just put in a book that would help them to just do this on their own, and they wouldn't need me anymore. And for most couples, that seemed to have worked, because really, relationships are a matter of how well you communicate.
Well, when you say communications and you describe it as being something that's important in a relationship, you and I both know that for some couples, the idea of being in a connected relationship, being fully engaged and fully connected versus embroiled in a disconnected relationship, well, it just doesn't seem possible.
Yeah, you know, I came up with a term called communication miracle, because a lot of times I would have couples who were arguing, screaming at each other for sometimes a number of years, and with the right method, they were back to a place of love in 10 minutes or less. So I think the technology, the communication technology, exists to really bring people back to a place of love very quickly. The problem is that most people have no training. You know, it's kind of like if you never took any training on how to drive a car, you would likely crash the first time you drove one. And even an hour of training would help you to not crash. And the same is true with communication and relationships. At least that's what I've seen.
Well, and the other piece to that, though, is if you took an hour of training to learn how to drive and you had less crashes, but then you threw your training out the window because you decided that now all of a sudden you were an expert, you might not fare so well. Maybe the same is true in relationships. Just because you have a sense of what you now know about communications with your partner, maybe that doesn't mean that you know everything there is to know, and maybe you need to keep at it.
Yeah, that's true. Thinking that you're really good will keep you from being really great. And, you know, and also theory, communication theory doesn't really help that much, because when we're stressed, all that theory goes right out the window.
Right.
So what I've focused on in the More Love, Less Conflict book is really simple methods that can be done often in under 15 seconds that can get you right back on track. And I find that that's what works. You know, my wife and I, we've been married over 20 years, and we used to argue a lot, and we haven't had an argument in about 5 years now, because we found a method that just involves saying two words, and that has prevented all our arguments.
Well, that sounds pretty miraculous. You say that we need to take the cue to be on cue. What is cue?
Well, CUE is an acronym, C-U-E, for the C stands for basically care, that people want to know that you care before they care what you have to say. So if you feel that your partner cares, that goes a long way. The U stands for understanding, and the E stands for empathy. And I think what people really want in their relationships is care, understanding, and empathy. Actually, I got that from Oprah. The first time I was on her show, I'd known a little bit about her background, that she, you know, was really poor growing up. She was put into the retarded people's class at school. She had been raped twice by the time she was 14, had a stillborn child at age 15, and then, you know, 20 years later, she's the most loved person on the planet. And I wondered how that happened, so I asked her. And she said, I realized as a teen I didn't have anything going for me. So I said, well, what could I have going for me? And she said, well, I really care about people, and I feel like I really understand them, and I have a lot of empathy. So I'm going to show my care, understanding, empathy every day. And she said, it looked like that worked out pretty well. And I would have to agree.
That's amazing. Care, understanding, and empathy. Simple words. It makes perfect sense as you say it. We'll have to go into more of how people get there and maybe how people can so quickly get away from there. I'm going to take you back to something you said a couple of moments ago. You said you and your wife haven't argued in 5 years. That seems like a miracle. And it's because there are two words that you use.
Yeah.
What two words?
Yeah. The words are red light, and when either of us say the words red light when we're stressed or we're starting to, like, upset each other, the agreement we have is that that will lead to a two-minute timeout where we don't speak for 2 minutes, and during that time we can relax or do whatever we want. And because we're not now working on the momentum of upset, we don't start saying things that are hurtful to each other, and we calm down, and by the time the 2 minutes is up, we're back in our rational mind versus our lizard brain, and therefore we don't argue.
Okay, 2 minutes in the scheme of things doesn't sound like a long enough time if a couple's really going at it.
Yeah, and well, actually, for the 2 minute break, we say yellow light. 2 minutes, if we say yellow light, it's 2 minutes. If we say red light, it's actually an hour.
Ah, interesting. And that works.
You know, I think only once in the last 5 years did we need to say red light. The yellow light, even a two-minute break, seems to make a huge difference in avoiding going down to deep, dark places of getting really angry.
For those listening who... they're hearing what you say. It sounds pretty magical, sounds kind of pretty not able to happen. And they've perhaps grown up in a fairly chaotic household themselves. What do you say to them? They want to believe you, but they think this is a lot of stuff and nonsense.
Yeah. Well, you know, I would think that as well, because I grew up in a really chaotic household with a lot of screaming, lots of divorces, lots of violence. And but the proof is in the pudding. You know, there's pretty much 50 methods in the More Love, Less Conflict book, and not everything will work for everybody. But if you try a bunch of things, or if you read a bunch of things, you'll say, even I could do that. You know, basically, I tried to make the method so simple, like, you know, saying two words here or fill in this sentence, things that were really ridiculously simple. So that if you used them, which you could use them because they're not complex, you would find that, well, some of them work much better than you expected, and some of them might not work as well as you had hoped. But once you find something that works for you, then you have a friend for life, because now you have something that pretty much always works.
I want to go back to the cue. The first word is care.
Yeah.
Talk about the importance of having the sense that your partner cares about what you're saying and what you're feeling, which, of course, can be hugely different from agreeing.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's good to separate those two. You know, the phrase I use is, your partner doesn't care what you have to say until they feel that you care. Now, how you show that care can be different. Usually, the way to show care is by showing that you understand your partner, even if you don't agree with them, and that you have empathy for their feelings. And, you know, in a way, the good news is that people are terrible at this. I mean, really horrible at it. They almost don't have any ability to do it whatsoever. I call that good news because somehow their relationship is holding together, even though they're not doing any of the right things. So when people start to, like, give a little bit of empathy, the change is immense. It's like giving a starving person some food. Their partner is incredibly grateful. So the best way to show care is to show your partner that you understand them, which often involves asking very precise questions, and also showing that you care about their feelings, which basically involves saying stuff like, well, it sounds like you're feeling frustrated. That must be really difficult. So it's not rocket science, but in this culture, we're never taught any of this stuff, and we're just expected to know it, but people don't normally manifest it.
Staying with the concept of if you cared about me, you'd agree with me, I want you to help us tease that apart a bit better. You and I both know that it's very common in a relationship for one party to say, well, you know, if she cared about me, she would stop drinking. If he cared about me, he would come home on time. So let's tease that apart a bit.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. It sounds like people would feel care if somebody agreed with them. But I have found that in reality, what people really care about is not that somebody agrees with them, but that somebody understands them and understands and does not dismiss their feelings. I have found whether you agree with them or not to be almost irrelevant, surprisingly. Now, the reason people think this is because not only are they not getting understanding, they're not getting the understanding and empathy, so they just want their partner to agree with them. But they're really different things. You know, if somebody really gets you and they really get why you feel that way, and they really are there with you and appreciate how you got there, you might still have a different opinion, and they're okay with that. So I think it's important to realize that you don't have to agree with your partner. You just have to show them that you care by understanding them and feeling their pain to some extent.
Okay, so I care about my partner, but it's really hard to understand what my partner is going through because I think that what my partner is doing is just nuts. Now what do I do?
Yeah, that's a great question. I have a game in the More Love, Less Conflict book called the Curiosity Game, where you're allowed to just ask questions. It's not a conversation, and you get to a point where you feel like you understand them. So, you know, nationally, there's this interesting thing going on with this intense polarization over politics. And I'm not a Trump supporter, but my wife's mother is, and she was feeling, you know, pretty put down because my wife also is not a Trump supporter. But I asked her questions like, so tell me, what do you like about Trump, and what do you feel about this policy, and what do you think about how what do you think he's doing to make America great again? All these questions that were coming from curiosity. They weren't coming from, you know, why do you think this stupid thing? They were coming from, I'm trying to understand you. In fact, that's the thing I said. I said, I'm trying to understand you and trying to see how you look at the world because I'm really curious. And she was more than happy to explain this. And I said, boy, it must be really hard when you meet people who are very anti-Trump because you really like him and you really feel like he's doing good things. That must be really stressful. And she said, exactly. Nobody understands that. You know, thank you for saying that. And she felt totally understood by me and was then willing to listen to my point of view. And that doesn't happen very much. We just, like, blame each other and yell at each other, and nobody's actually listening. Now, I'm still a non-Trump supporter, and she still is a Trump supporter. But she came very much over to my side because she was now willing to ask me questions and understand my point of view. And there's no right or wrong. You know, it's a complicated thing. But when couples just blame each other, it doesn't do any good. So they really need to ask questions and be empathetic to get to the next level of communication.
So blaming doesn't help understanding, it doesn't help awareness, it doesn't help anything, except it helps you to go further into a place where, for some couples, it's really hard to get out of.
Absolutely. You know, I love self-righteousness, don't you? I mean, it feels really good.
Absolutely.
You know, so that's why I invented some of these methods, because how do I get myself out of this hole? You know, because this is like candy. But I also like love. And love and self-righteousness don't go hand in hand. So there are simple methods, and we can practice some of them in later segments here, where I talk about, you know, if you fill in this sentence, it will take you out of self-righteousness and back to a place of love. And, you know, realize love's the most powerful force in the universe. We want it. We crave it. But we don't know necessarily how to get there consistently, and that's a little bit of a learning process.
So it sounds like if we can remember that the person that we care about, we really do care about, and that understanding their perspective is useful for both of us, that...
Yeah, I often think I can go into self-righteousness and be shut down, argumentative, and angry for 5 hours, or I can use this communication tool for 15 seconds and get back to a place of love. That's pretty much the choice. And when you see it that clearly, most of the time, not every time, but most of the time, I'll choose love.
And, you know, by the same token, there are certainly people who will say, this partner has really hurt my feelings. I'm really angry, and I'm not feeling very loving. Why do I want to get back to love? Love hasn't done me any good.
Yeah. Well, that blame, complain, shame method leads to conflict, leads to a lack of love. But if you see and start to realize that these methods get you back to a place of love quickly, and that feels really good, then you learn that forgiveness is actually worth it. Not to them, but to you. Now, right now, people don't have that experience because they don't really know how to get back to a place of love efficiently. And self-righteousness is a lot easier. But it doesn't, these methods, you know, I mean, people use iPhones not because they make everything better, but because they're very easy and they work. You know, you can make a call, you can listen to your music 20 seconds, you know, and you're listening to an audiobook or whatever. And the same thing needs to happen in the world of relationships and communication, and that's why I came up with all these really simple methods that it doesn't really matter whether you believe in them or not. It doesn't matter if you believe in your iPhone or not. It just works. And when it works, then you say, well, I'm going to do that again.
Jonathan Robinson, author of More Love, Less Conflict, A Communication Playbook for Couples. Don't go away, folks. We'll be back in just a moment. Thank you. Jonathan, you talk about three levels of communication. What are they?
Well, the first one could be called informational. Right now we're pretty much at an informational level with that question where you want some information. It might be, what are you doing today? Or talking about the weather. That's an important thing to run your life, but it's not ultimately that satisfying in terms of emotional connection. So the second level is what could be called emotional or personal, where you're starting to talk about feelings and what you want and things like that. That's a little bit deeper. And then there's a third level, which is called relational, which is things like talking about what's going on for you right now in your relationship. So if I said, for example, I might say, right now I'm enjoying this interview because I think you asked really good questions, and I'm kind of excited about trying a couple of methods with you because I think that'll be really interesting and fun. That's a little bit more self-disclosure, and when you talk about what's going on in the moment in a relationship, that tends to be more of a intimate or deep form of communication.
All right. I want you to tell me about the four horsemen. What's horsemen got got to do with couples?
Yeah, I say the four horsemen of the relationship apocalypse, meaning your relationship is about to go downhill. And it's really the four D's. Hopefully I can remember them. First one is denigration, which basically means blame or putting your partner down. And I like to say blame never works. You know, never once have I told my wife how wrong she is and everything that she's doing poorly where she said, oh, yeah, I see that now. Thank you for pointing out the errors of my ways. I'm going to have to change. Yeah, I'm 0 for 100 on that. So blame really doesn't work, although that's how most of us communicate in relationships. Another D is dismissal. That's when we kind of dismiss our partner's feelings. Like we say, oh, it's no big deal, or it's not that important, or something like that. Another D is denial, when we don't even want to address an issue or we deny that there is an issue. That certainly doesn't work. And there's another D, if I can remember what it is.
Distraction. How about that one?
Distraction, yeah. We have these things called the Ds, not weapons of mass destruction, but widgets of mass distraction, like our iPhone, email, all the, Facebook, all these things, which are rather superficial forms of communication. And I think what everybody really wants nowadays in this busy lifestyle we have is true intimacy and depth and connection. So these smartphones, texting, all these things aren't really giving us what our heart desires. And I'd like to point out that, 1,000 Facebook friends does not really equal one really good friend who's there for you.
And half the time...
So, we want to make sure that we're not totally distracted from intimacy, because intimacy is one of the greatest experiences in life. And luckily, the instructions for finding intimacy are hidden in the word, into me see. So when people reveal stuff about themselves, it creates a bond, and there's luckily some methods that make revealing appropriate stuff about yourself relatively easy.
Well, that's one of the age-old questions, I think. What do you tell? When do you tell it? How do you tell it? Particularly, I'm not sure, when you've met via a dating site. I would suggest that so much of what you've put out there, you've thought about, you've crafted it, you've made it as pretty as you can, and now you meet. So what do you tell? What do you say? How do you say it?
Well, for people in that situation, really anybody, I have on my website 12 questions of instant intimacy. These are 12 questions that you can ask a date or your mate, and they always lead to a deep honesty from both people and deep connection. And people can download it for free from the website, which is morelovelessconflict.com.
Okay.
And when you see what somebody else's answers are, what level of disclosure they are giving, you then can know what level of disclosure, that you want to reveal. So when people use these 12 questions, in literally 20 minutes, they can learn more about somebody than they may have learned in 12 years, because you're getting down to what are really deep issues and answers very, very quickly.
It sounds like you're discussing the way to go about speed dating in a way that's useful.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay.
But it works also outside of dating. My wife and I did these 12 questions, and we tend to do them like once a year, and it always leads to a really incredible connection. So it can be used even with, mother-daughter or friends, but it does work really well for getting to know somebody at a deep level quite quickly.
Give us an example of one or two questions.
One would be, what gives you your greatest sense of joy right now? Or another one would be, what is the trait that you most, that you find that you most appreciate about me?
Interesting. They are deep, they are personal, and yet you can ask them almost at any time.
Yeah. And I like asking deep questions, because deep questions lead to deep answers. You know, a lot of times couples, somebody will come in and say, well, I'd like to have this deep relationship, but my partner isn't into reading your book or communication. And what I say to them is that, in dance, it does take two to tango. But in communication, it really only takes one person who's really good at, and they can guide the other person through certain questions. You might not be into communication, but if I ask you, what's your favorite thing to do nowadays? You don't say, bug off, why are you asking me this? You probably would answer that question.
That's right.
And now we're off on an interesting conversation. So, if you're a good enough communicator and you have the right methods, then you can literally kind of spread love wherever you go. I was a depressed, shy kid that had no friends, and now one of the biggest problems I have is I have too many friends. Everybody wants to spend time with me. And it's not because I'm that great of a guy. It's because I know how to create conversations that are deep and loving and meaningful to people wherever I go. So I have a lot of people who want to do business with me. I have a lot of friends that want to spend time with me. It appears to them like I'm just a really sweet, loving person. Well, I'm no more loving than I was when I was friendless as a teenager. I'm just a better communicator, and that leads to more love.
You talk about 5 simple questions. That's how you characterize them in your book. Let's talk about that. Let's go through that for a moment. What are these 5 simple questions? Why are they important? And how simple are they, really?
Well, they're pretty simple. We could go through them. The first question is probably the most complicated. And these are questions that you would tend to ask when you and your partner are having a real problem. So, first question is, what story am I telling myself about this situation? Now, last night, just to reveal some stuff, my wife and I went out to dinner with another couple, and my wife was uncharacteristically quiet and not that engaged. And I started to create this story like, she doesn't like this couple, and she doesn't like my friends, and the whole thing. So I asked myself, what story am I telling myself that she doesn't like, you know, my friends or whatever? And what might be another thing going on? Well, it ends up that she wasn't feeling well. So, you know, realizing that I'd made this story and that I didn't really know what was going on helped me to not get really invested in the story and not get really upset. So that's one question. Another question is, what do I want? Well, I want to have a great time here, you know, and I want everybody to be involved. Next question, what am I feeling? I'm feeling anxious because she's not talking a whole lot. And so I kind of, knowing this, I took her aside and I said, what's going on? You're being really quiet. And she said, yeah, I'm not feeling really well. And then I actually felt better because, you know, it had nothing to do with me or the couple. And then next question, what do I imagine my partner is thinking, wanting, and feeling? Well, once I asked her, I kind of knew. She said, I like some aspirin. This is the first thing she said. And that she wanted to, you know, not have it be too late of an evening so she'd feel better. And then the last question, how can I listen and express myself in a way that shows my partner my care, understanding, and empathy? Well, first thing I did was I got her some aspirin. She felt better. We ended up staying out late. We had a wonderful time. So, you know, these things can help you to get over what might have taken a whole evening or even longer to work through. I was able to basically work through it in about 2 minutes.
You know, you characterize these as five simple questions. I would suggest that they may be simple in terms of the amount of words in the question, but these are very powerful questions. What story am I telling myself about this situation? Wow. I mean, that's an amazing question.
Yeah, yeah. And when you realize that the story going on in your head may be totally different than what's actually going on, that doubt or that non-certainty really helps, because we get lost in our stories. We always think our stories are right, but when you realize it's just a story, then you automatically it relieves some of the pressure.
You talk about curiosity as a portal, and that certainly piqued my curiosity. I use the concept of curiosity a great deal in my own practice. What do you mean that it is a portal?
Well, first of all, I think curiosity is the best antidote for conflict. Because if you're really curious, people really love curiosity. What they don't love is feeling blamed. But if you really are trying to understand someone, they're more than happy to explain themselves. And it's a portal because it's the thing that can lead to understanding. You know, I never have couples come into my office and say, Jonathan, we really understand each other quite well. That's why we're looking to get a divorce. You know, I have the opposite happen all the time. I don't understand them at all, and we want a divorce. So if people are able to ask good questions, I can tell that you're really good at that. So it makes one, the interview really easy, but I would imagine to the extent that you use that in your relationships, your people you care about really appreciate it. And most people are not very curious, so they don't ask these types of questions, and they're missing out on giving their partners what they most need. So I think curiosity kind of opens up your world and opens up the possibility of understanding and love. And it's one of those, like, magic ingredients that can make everything a little bit better.
For those who have the partner who says, you're asking me all these questions, could you give it a rest? I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do with curiosity there?
Then you want to balance it off with empathy. You know, and empathy is agreeing that somebody's having the experience they say they're having. So I've had people say that in my office, and then my response to them was, boy, it just seems overwhelming to you with the amount of questions, and you're wondering, like, why am I doing this? That must be make you feel a little bit anxious. And they say, exactly, and now we're back on the same page again. So being able to ask questions is like one wing of a plane, and being able to give people empathy and acknowledge their feelings is another wing of the plane. You put those two things together, and that relationship's going to soar. If one of those wings is missing, then it might not look so good.
It might, in fact, crash and burn, which many people often do. Speaking of that, the rates of divorce are astronomical. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that life is very stressful, and people have high hopes and expectations in relationships and no training, and therefore a lot of things crash. And people don't necessarily learn just by repetition. The rate of divorce in second marriages is higher than first marriages, and the rate of divorce of third marriages is higher than second marriages. So just repetition doesn't mean that people learn. I think you need a little bit of training, a little bit of the right methods, and then you can avoid these problems. With stress and texting and email and all these distractions and things that we've been brought up to believe, I'm amazed that the rate of divorce isn't higher. You know, actually, 75% of couples say that they are not happy in their relationship. So even though people aren't getting divorced, they're still not getting more love and less conflict. So I'd say that the best investment you can make in your relationship is learning some of this stuff. But it's also the best investment you can make for your kids, because the quality of a person's life is very, very much based on the quality of their relationships. And if you can teach your kids or your friends how to communicate better, you're giving a great gift to them as well. So excuse my proselytizing here, but I haven't seen another skill that can have such a big impact on a person's life.
Well, I am going to thank you for your proselytizing, because, in fact, I couldn't agree with you more. Our lives are built around our relationships with ourselves, with others, but relationships. And it's just not clear to me that we give that enough of an elevation, if you will, in our sense of ourselves and the world around us.
Yeah, it's like, more money can make you happy. But once you have middle-class status, more money doesn't seem to have much impact. The thing that really leads to more happiness is the quality and quantity of your relationships. And once again, you know, we spend years trying to learn how to make more money. We spend often less than 5 minutes in our entire life learning how to have better relationships.
Jonathan Robinson, author of More Love, Less Conflict, A Communication Playbook for Couples. We will be back in just a moment, and maybe we can go through some exercises to help you understand more about what Jonathan is saying. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Thank you. Jonathan, one of the things that you've referenced, and I'd like to focus a little bit more attention on, is the various exercises that you have made available in More Love and Less Conflict. And something else that I noticed I think is really helpful to the person who's reading, particularly if they're reading at a time of stress, is your guide to exercises. You've really broken them down into, you know, what the issue may be that you're dealing with, and then what the exercise is that might be useful for that. So let's talk about, well, do you have a favorite exercise before I ask you about an exercise?
Well, let's start with something really simple. The best predictor of how happy couples are in a relationship is the number of appreciations they give to each other. So I like to give my wife an appreciation every day that's sincere. And, you know, sometimes I get caught up with stuff. So I actually have Siri on my iPhone remind me to do this. Don't tell my wife this, by the way, Dr. Burr.
I won't tell her.
So we've known each other about 35 minutes, but there's already several things that I notice that I appreciate about you. And if I take the simple sentence, something I notice about you that I appreciate is that you ask incredibly good questions. You know, you're not asking canned questions. You're asking questions really from your curiosity, and it allows me to go a little bit deeper into this than I do in a lot of other interviews because of your openness and curiosity, and I appreciate that. Now, as people do say appreciations to each other, and you can do one to me if you want, what it does is it helps to create a stronger bond, and we need that nowadays.
So let me try that. One of the things that I appreciate about you during our conversation is the sense that you're really open and genuine in your responses. And that's something that I really appreciate.
Good. Thank you. I can take that in. And, you know, this gets a little bit more intimate and deeper than just sharing information. Or another one that is very simple like that is to say, if you really knew me, you would know blank. So, Dr. Burr, if you really knew me, you would know that after this interview, I am going dancing with my wife. And dancing is one of my favorite things to do, so I'm kind of like, you know, excited or feeling really good about the day ahead of me.
I would say that if you really knew me, you would see the huge smile on my face right now, because I love the idea of you being excited about going dancing with your wife.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And we call it dance church because it's Sunday morning here, and we go dancing every Sunday morning.
I think that is absolutely delightful. Let's talk about some other kinds of exercises. Let's go with the self-empathy pep talk. What is that?
A lot of times, nobody has asked me that before. I appreciate that. When two people are stressed, both people are wanting empathy from their partners. But sometimes nobody has any empathy to give. It's kind of like a bank account where you have no money in it. So what you can do is actually give yourself empathy, which fills up your, like, emotional bank account. And what that sounds like, I actually give an example in the book, but real briefly, it could be like, hey, you know, this is really hard, you're stressed out now, your partner's upset, they don't have anything to give, this is, like, really the most tough place to be, you're doing a great job because you're not lashing out, and you're not doing the things that would make it worse. I'm really proud of you for being able to handle this. It's really difficult and painful, and hopefully it'll get better because you're not lashing out, and maybe you just need to take a walk and calm down and take really good care of yourself. So that's an example of giving yourself empathy, and by doing that, it might make it easier for you to give your partner empathy. And when two people are gaining empathy, they calm down immediately. And that's a good place for better communication to grow in.
So it sounds like you're talking about being in the moment and engaging in self-soothing internal dialogue.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And people generally don't do that.
Right.
They're insisting that they get it from their partner, this ability to soothe them. But sometimes your partner is not in a place where they have anything to give.
The idea that you could be in a conflict with your partner and say to your partner and mean it, "You talk, I'll listen," and you really listen, you got to help me with that one.
Well, sometimes the sense of people going back and forth so quickly prevents somebody from listening. Because, you know, if my partner says something I disagree with and I say it, now we're in a disagreement. But let's say I say, "Hey, feel free to talk for 5 minutes, and for 5 minutes I will listen, and I won't interrupt." Then you don't have to spend so much time rehearsing your answer because you're listening. And your partner can go below the blame and the complaining and to what's really going on, because they don't feel like they have to convince you so much. They have more time and space to explore what's really going on. And now, this is one of these methods where the description of it and the experience of it are very different. You know, if you were going to describe the method of having sex, you'd say, well, you know, one person puts this body part in that person's body part, and they flop up and down on each other. Well, that doesn't sound like the true joy of a good lovemaking experience. And in the same way, when you describe methods, they don't necessarily sound like amazing, miraculous things. But a lot of people who have tried this simple thing of, you know, I'll talk for 5 minutes and you listen for 5 minutes and then we'll reverse roles, are astounded by the effect that it has, because finally couples get honest and get to it, and they really hear each other because they're not interrupting each other.
And I would suggest that with that exercise, it's important that, let's say, when I choose to talk for 5 minutes, that talking isn't about how terrible you are for what you've done to me.
Right. Well, that's always better if you don't spend a lot of time on that. But couples who I see often do spend the first minute doing that because they just have to unwind. But if somebody's not resisting that, that usually only lasts about a minute. And now you have 4 more minutes. What am I going to talk about? And usually what happens is people go below the blame, shame, complain, and they go into what's really going on for them. So even if people start off the wrong way, they often get back to a place of love, because realize love is a powerful force in the universe, and if given the right growing environment, people will often make their way back to it.
You've got a chapter which you use the phrase, spoon until you're tuned.
Yeah.
What? Help me out.
Well, this was a method I had in my previous book, and it was so popular that I put it in this book. Jay Leno on The Tonight Show said that it saved his marriage. And what it is if you're upset or stressed out, you can just hold your partner like in the hugging position or spooning position, which is a man's front to the woman's back, and just breathe in unison for a couple minutes. And once again, the description of it and the experience are very different, but what this does is it puts you on the same wavelength when you breathe together and hold each other. It like calms people down really, really deeply and quickly. And even if you want to be upset at somebody, the fact that you're breathing together and holding each other seems to just make you feel all mushy inside. So a lot of couples will do this as a way to prevent arguments, or they'll do it as a way to de-stress after the day. It doesn't take long. And, you know, when you feel like you're on the same wavelength, then good communication often happens by itself.
The number of times that I've heard people say in response to, you know, anybody, the partner, anybody saying, you don't have any feelings, you never talk about your feelings, anything in that area. And one partner will say, well, I don't have any feelings.
Huh?
What do you say?
Well, the reason why some partners are not in touch with their feelings is because every time they say their feelings, their partner either dismisses them or tells them how wrong they are. And so eventually the person just shuts down their feelings. Now, even if they said, well, I don't have any feelings, for you to have empathy and say, oh, it sounds like you feel kind of numb inside and just like unfeeling, and that must feel a little, you know, lonely. And then they'll say, exactly. Well, they just express a feeling. You just acknowledge their feelings, which will help them to acknowledge future feelings. So I've had a lot of people come in and say, I have no feelings, because their partner kind of craps on their feelings without knowing it. And when that situation is changed, soon that person's very much in touch with their feelings. And I've had that happen within an hour. So the beginning of getting in touch with your feelings is to acknowledge whatever is there, even if it's numbness, even if it's loneliness, even if it's, I'd like to feel something, I'd like to feel more intimate with you, but right now I don't. All that is the beginning of the healing process.
You make a comment pretty early on in More Love, Less Conflict. And when you say it can be extremely useful to look at yourself and your partner in terms of what you each truly desire or value in an intimate relationship. And you give a list of words to sort of help people identify for themselves. Why is that important, and what are some of the typical things that people desire or value in an intimate relationship, and why is it important to know?
Well, I'll give you a quick story as to why it's important, and then say how the story relates to this. When I was in college, I had a roommate who was a great basketball player, and he wanted to kind of put me in my place, so he challenged me to a game of basketball, and I said, I'll play you on one condition. I get to bring any one-ounce gadget onto the court and place it wherever I want. And he said, sure, okay. So we go to the basketball court, and I take out my gadget, which was a blindfold, and I place it in a strategic location, namely over his eyes, and I say, let the games begin. And I managed to beat this great basketball player, not because I'm any good at basketball, but because if you throw enough things in the right general direction, something's going to go in. and he was throwing balls up, but they weren't in the right direction. So if you know what your target is, it makes it a lot easier to hit it. Now, I really like ecstasy. I like joy, I like intimacy, and I like love. Now, some people, are more into different feelings. They like adventure, or they like security, or they like a sense of belonging. These are slightly different things. So it's good to know what you really, really, really want. And even tell your partner, but as long as you know what target you're after, it's going to make it easier to hit that target. A lot of times we act as if what we really want more than anything else in the whole world is to be right. Can be a good experience, but most people want to be right. They don't really want to be right. What they want is more respect. So they can communicate, I really want more respect from you. And how to get that is then talked about in the book. But it does help to know exactly what you're aiming for.
So I can imagine somebody saying, I would like more respect from you, and the other person saying, if you would behave in a more respectable way, you would get it. What do you do with that?
Uh-huh. Yeah, they do have comments like that, but that's where certain questions or methods can be very useful, because you'd say, well, what are some other ways, other than agreeing with everything you say, that I could show my respect? You know, because there's a lot of ways to show respect. And often couples both want the same thing, and they're both unwilling to give it to each other. So if you give respect, you'll likely get respect. If you give intimacy, you'll likely get intimacy. If you give good listening, you'll likely get good listening. But people don't often know how to do that precisely, so I offer, like, fill-in-the-blank statements. That make it easier to give these things more effectively without having to master a whole lot of stuff. You know, if you say appreciation, I appreciate this about you, that's a way of giving respect. If you acknowledge people's feelings, it sounds like you're feeling really annoyed about this. I certainly understand why you'd feel that way. That's a way of giving respect. So there's a lot of very precise ways to give people what they want, and most people get stuck because they only know one way, and that one way they don't want to do.
Jonathan, we are just about out of time, and there is so much more for us to learn about more love, less conflict. What's a website where people can go to?
Well, luckily, it's very simple. It's morelovelessconflict.com, and people can download for free the 12 questions of instant intimacy on that website.
Wonderful. Jonathan, thank you so much for your book, for the work you do, and for the time you've spent with us today.
Thank you, Dr. Brewer. I appreciate the questions.
And folks, thank you for joining us on this edition of Mind Talk, which is brought to you daily as an educational public service and not intended to replace any work that you might choose to do with a mental health, medical health, or other professional. You can always listen to Mind Talk on demand by going to myndtalk.org, or you can carry Mind Talk with you once you download the Mind Talk app from either iTunes or the Google Play Store. I'd love to know where in the world you are as you're listening today, so do send an email to me. That's Pamela, P-A-M-E-L-A, at mindtalk.org. Again, that's myndtalk.org. And that's the place to send your questions, your comments, or any thoughts you may have about this or any other Mind Talk program. And you remember always, if it's unacceptable, then it's unacceptable. Take care.